As I read the story of Daniel, I recall the words that Paul wrote to Timothy as a farewell to his protege in ministry. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 16 and 17, it says, "At my first defense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that the message might be preached fully through me, and that all the Gentiles might hear. Also, I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion." We really cannot be certain what Daniel or what Paul was speaking of when he says here, "I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion." There are some that believe he spoke of the lions, the wild beasts, and the Colosseum, where they would cast Christians to be devoured, to be murdered, torn apart for the entertainment of the mob. There are some that believe that Daniel or that Paul was thinking in his mind, "I've been delivered from the Colosseum." Of course, we know that when Paul wrote these words, he was probably no more than hours before his own death. But it could have been that he referred to Satan, that great adversary of our faith. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." The 21st century's brand of American Christianity is completely different than the first century's brand of Christianity. In fact, it's different than what Jesus told his disciples to expect. He didn't tell them, "Hey, your experience as my follower is going to be a great experience, a wonderful experience. You're going to have fun. Everything's going to go hunky-dory. Everything's going to be wonderful." Instead, he said, "In this world, you will have persecution. But be of good cheer, for I've overcome the world." Peter wrote those words I quoted a moment ago. Be very careful. You have an adversary, the devil. He goes about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He does not play fair. He plays dirty. He'll do everything he can to hurt you, to break your heart. It's not that you might not have everything you want. When things go wrong, and by the way, you need to understand something about this life. You need to write this down. You need to get it straight as a Christian. Teenagers know better than anybody else. You know what they say? That's not fair. Well, let me tell you a little secret. Life isn't fair. Write it down. You adults need to learn something from your kids. This world is not fair. You know why? Because it's broken. If you think everything's going to be great in this life, you are going to be very disappointed. If your heart hasn't been broken, if you've not experienced disappointment, if you don't know what depression is, it's because somehow, some way, you've lived in a bubble all your life. You don't live in the real world. That's not what it's like. And if you think it's tough for a lost person, here's what happens to Christians. They get this idea in their head. Oh, because I'm saved now, everything that happens to me is going to be great, and I'm not going to experience any pain or any sorrow. And the only difference between you and a lost man, as far as problems is you don't have to face it alone. You understand? Jesus said, "I am with you all the way." You know what? I've worked with Christians for 45 years. And you know what I found out? That Christians still get cancer. In fact, I found out that the loved ones of Christians still get cancer. I found that Christian marriages sometimes end. I found out that sometimes Christian kids make bad decisions and break their hearts and break their parents' hearts. You need to understand, you have an adversary, the devil, who goes about like a roaring lion. Now let me tell you something. He cannot touch your soul, but he can make your life miserable if you listen to him. If you listen to him. Everybody in this church who has been a Christian for any length of time, you know people who used to sit next to you in church, who may have taught Sunday school classes, been very faithful to church, but when the problems came, they thought in their mind, well, this isn't fair. No, it's not fair. And that's just the way life is. I want to go with you for just a moment to an old man sitting in a Roman prison who has done everything right, and he is praying now. Actually, he's writing from Corinth, I should say. And something's gone wrong with his health, and he's asking God to heal him. And this is his testimony. There was given unto me a thorn in my flesh, Satan's messenger, to buffet me. Now let me explain to you the word buffet. It means to beat up and to break down. There was given to me a thorn in the flesh, Satan's messenger, to beat me up and to break me down. And three times I asked my God, please take this away. And three times he said to me, no. And then Paul goes into a rant and says, I can't understand this. Life, this isn't fair. God, why don't you do something for me? Just like some of you do. Just like a lot of Christians who live like the devil 6 days a week and something goes wrong and they can't understand why there's a problem in their life. Grow up. You're not living in an ideal world. And instead of turning away from God, who is there to heal you and help you, turn to him. That's what Satan wants you to do. Here's what Paul said, instead of it's not there. Paul said, I found that God's grace is sufficient for me. And it is. And you'll get to the end without regrets if you will understand that God's grace, it is his grace that is sufficient for you. 85, 95 years of age, there's Daniel. I mean, he probably was glad for the fact that one day one of the advisors of Belteshazzar came to him and said, Daniel, we're going to relieve you of all your duty. You can just go ahead and retire. We don't want you around. I think it was probably a disappointment. Now, Daniel knew what was happening. Belteshazzar was an idiot king. He was losing the empire. He saw what was coming. He'd heard the reports. The Medo-Persians were surrounding the city. They were going to take the city. It was just a matter of time. And Belshazzar calls for the holy instruments that had been stolen out of the temple in Jerusalem so he could profane them. And there was a hand writing on the wall. Just review. And all of a sudden, when this drunken king saw the hand writing on the wall, he sobered up and his knees knocked against themselves. And he was scared out of his mind. And the queen mother came to him and said, look, I know of a guy that served your grandfather and your father who in him is the spirit of the holy God. You call him. He'll tell you what it means. And in comes Daniel, looks upon the wall. looks at the young drunken king and he says, this is what it says, mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. You are weighed and found wanting. God has numbered your days, and by the way, they're finished. And that night, he died, and his kingdom was given to the Medes and the Persians. Now, Darius was a good judge of character and of talent. And so when he set up his government, there was these three governors that oversaw all the rest. And Daniel, he thought, well, you know, this guy did good for the Babylonians. He'll do good for me. And he set him up as one of the three top men in the kingdom, just below him. You know what? He did so well that he said, no, he's not. I'm going to put him over all the kingdom. Can you imagine that? This foreign-born Jewish slave who started to the very bottom, and now he is the top man in the kingdom of Darius and all of those other politicians. You know how you can tell a politician's lying, right? Their lips are moving. All of those other politicians, they're sucking their thumb and they're saying, I can't believe he's putting them up over us. We got to do something. And they start conspiring. And here's what they come up with. We know this Daniel. He is honest. He is loyal. There will be nothing we can find against him unless we can find something against him concerning his love and loyalty to his God. Light bulb moment. The idea comes to them. They go to the king, who doesn't show a whole lot of wisdom here. And he says, King, oh king, listen, we've gotten together and we've talked about it and we want to honor you. And here's what we think. We think that you ought to establish a law set in the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Now, this is what that means. Once the king makes a law, there is no other authority in the land that can amend that law. That's it. It's set. That's the way it is. And here's what we want you to do, king. We think you are so wonderful and so great and so fine and so smart and so good looking that we want you to make a decree that nobody can pray to anybody but you for 30 days. They can't pray to any other god. They can't pray to any other man. Just you. You're the only one they can pray to. And if they do, they should be thrown in to a den of lions. And Darius thinks, yeah, I really am a cool guy. I think that'd be a great thing to do. And so he makes the law. And you get down about in verse 10. And I want you to notice what it says in verse 10. It says, Daniel knew the law that had been written. And so he goes way down deep in the basements of his house and he prays where nobody can see him. Is that what it says? Daniel knew the law. I mean, I can see it. You know, he goes in and he opens his curtains as wide as they can and he's looking back toward Jerusalem where his heart wants to be. And he begins to pray like he always did. See, the law changed, but Daniel didn't. There's something we need to remember. You can make sin legal, but you can't make it right, and you can't make it moral. You can't do it. Do you know what went through Daniel's mind as soon as he heard about the decree that he was not to pray to any man or any god except Darius for 30 days? He remembered what his God said when his God said, you will have no other gods before me. Didn't matter what the king said. God said, you will have no other gods before me. Settled. That's it. So just like he always had, opened his windows, faced Jerusalem, and he prayed. Guess who was sitting on just outside in the yard watching him? All of his enemies. You know why? You know why, Scott? You know why. Tell me why. Well, because they knew what he was going to do.
He'd done
He'd always done it. They knew he wasn't going to change. Remember what they said? We won't find anything against him unless it has to do with the law of his God. Maybe one of those gentlemen knew about that first commandment. So we're going to set him up. So they take him in before Darius. And here, you know, they are so subtle. Didn't you say, Darius, not us, but didn't you say that anybody who prayed to anybody but you for 30 days would go into den of lions? And Darius still kind of just a little bit in that duh mode, said, yeah, that's right, me. They can only pray to me. He said, well, you know your man, Daniel? He's praying to his God and not you. And it tells us that Darius was displeased with himself. Light bulb came on. These guys have played me to put Daniel in jeopardy. So they take Daniel down and they put him in this den of lions. Now these weren't amateur lions. These were professional lions who knew how to chew up human beings. Now, this is what I think, too. I don't think they'd fed him for a few days. See, I've heard an explanation. This is the explanation that I've had someone try to tell me about Daniel and lions. Well, they just weren't hungry. Do you know? I'm going to offend some of you about cats. But if your cat was the size of a lion, he'd eat you. Well, you go ahead and be in denial as much as you want. But here's the fact. If that lion with his cat nature, it wouldn't matter whether he was hungry or not. I guarantee you they would have had a time with Daniel. Let's just see what happens if I take my nail and go, yeah, right down the middle of his belly. They weren't hungry. Do you have a cat? Okay. Then I won't offend you. I'll offend Cheryl, but I won't offend you. There was no way under God's heaven. No, has he ever brought you a trophy? Just, you know, a mouse or something outside that he wasn't hungry. He just wanted to bring you something dead, that's all, you know. All right. So get over your fence because I'm trying to make a point. The bottom line was, it didn't matter whether those lions were hungry. There were probably other times, you know. Can you imagine? They throw in about three guys at the same time, and those lions, they get their fill and one's like, you know what? I just can't eat another bite. But that guy's still alive, isn't he? That's all right. You know, that would have been it. So Darius doesn't sleep the whole night. And he gets up early in the morning and he runs down. Remember the last thing Darius had said to Daniel before he left? Your God will deliver you. Do you know what I think, though? I think he was saying, I hope your God delivers you. If he hadn't meant that, then why would have he not slept the whole night? And why would have he gone down to the lion's den the next morning? Early. So he goes down and he says, no, Daniel, has your God been able to deliver you? And a voice from the den says, O king, live forever. Can you imagine the lions? As they throw in this Jew and they start surrounding him, and one looks to the other and says, you know what? I can't open my mouth. I want to. Oh, I'll try the claws. You know what? I can't get my claws out. See, I'm a visual person, and I see Daniel leaning up against one lion and his feet up on the other one. Spending the night and probably petting the one next to him. And that lion just looked at him saying, you know what? You are the most amazing man I've ever seen in my life. I bet you taste good and I can't get my mouth open. O King, live forever. My God has sent his angel to close the mouth of the lion, and they have done me no hurt. You understand that throughout the Old Testament, and I can't say without reservation that that angel he sent was the Lord Jesus Christ, but I think it very well could have been the same one who walked through the fire with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in chapter 3, the one who is like unto the Son of God. My God has sent his angel to deliver me, and they have done me no harm. Now, God's funny about proving his point. So here's what his point was. For those folks who said the lions weren't very hungry, the king gathered up all those men who brought accusation against Daniel and his and their families and threw them in the lion's den. And you go ahead and read it itself. It says those lions had no problem breaking their bones. Because you see, that angel who protected Daniel had no relationship with Daniel's accusers. I've got a few observations for you. I realize I've not given you much in the way of my PowerPoint, but I just want to give you the final thing, the observations right there at the end. Number one, and I'll get to it in my notes. Daniel had an amazing testimony. Can you imagine this? This foreign-born Jew into the second foreign kingdom he served. And now he is over the whole kingdom, except for the king. Verse 3, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Application. The Christian should be the most loyal and conscientious person on the job. Doesn't matter what anybody else does. Oh, well, they don't do their job well. You should do yours well. Because you are representing the King of Kings. Number two, even his enemies knew the strength of his faith. Verse 5, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Can I ask you a question? And we don't need a show of hands or any testimonies or anything, but I want to ask you this question. Do the people you work with even know you're a Christian? Do they see your faith at work every day? Now, before you get too jumpy on me on this one, if your answer is yes, then why aren't you bringing some of them to Jesus Christ? Because, you see, that's really the test of your faith right there. That really is the test of your faith. We're never going to win this world to Jesus unless they see Jesus living in us. See, that was the thing with Daniel's enemies. They saw his God living in him. They didn't accept his God, except for the king. Read what the king writes about his God after this situation. Number three, Daniel did not adjust his faith to culture. Verse 10, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before the God to his God, as was his custom during the early days. Here's what I hear Well, you can't do things you used to do. You can't witness like you used to could. It's just different. The world's just different. Culture's just different. You know, it's funny because the culture changed for Daniel, but Daniel's faith never changed. Observation number four, Daniel's faith was not altered by circumstance. Daniel made no defense of his actions. That's interesting to me. The king says, Daniel, have you done this? Yeah. But you got to understand, king, this is why I did it. Daniel felt no need to justify his actions. Why? Because although the situation was bad, his God was the same God. And kind of like back to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, remember what they said to the king? Our God is able, but if not, what's the matter? What's the matter if God does deliver me or not? I know he can. What's the matter whether he does or not? If not, we're still not going to bow our knee. Number five, and I'm done. God received the glory. Listen to what Darius wrote. I make a decree in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works and works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? And he will deliver us from the lion who stalks us every day. Now, here's how it works. We either turn to him in faith and he delivers us, or we decide to do it on our own, and we are on our own. If we turn to him, there is grace. If we turn from him, we're on our own. If we turn to him, his grace is sufficient. If we turn from him, it's our power and not his power. Daniel, as Paul said, he delivered me from the mouth of the lion.